button, asshole. Hello, welcome to another episode of Snacks Packs. As always, we're here.
You have a foundation?
I don't have a foundation.
I also don't have the foundation.
It's a foundation for we all just
chill stop. Out. Yeah,
just chill stop. Out. Let's just
stop and chill
that.
Out. Stop yeah. and chill out. And also the foundation to make them pay. There's someone in your life that you need to make pay.
Make
we'll em. Make them or you make them.
Did I tell you about that dude in my neighborhood who was dancing with flashlights at night and just screaming?
No, that's awesome though.
So for weeks, this big tall dude would go out and just like dance around and with a flashlight, sometimes in the sidewalk, sometimes in the street. He'd do it from like 7 to 11, 7 to 10 p.m. almost every night. And he'd just go like, up, loop,
any headphones in or anything?
I couldn't tell his long like yeah. locks, so it was really hard to see.
How big is he?
Like 6.5 feet tall. He's a big, tall guy.
Is he like big fat or like in
nah,
shape?
Nah, he's in shape.
Yeah, no one's going to tell like that guy run. To stop. No
he looks like he could run, yeah.
No one's going to tell that guy to stop.
No, so I was like, is he mentally ill? Because, you know... whatever, I'm just gonna not go near him
yeah,
at night.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I'd been like when I go on my walks after work, I just like see him and I'm like, I'll just go the other direction. That's yeah. fine. I don't need to
do any of that.
Yeah, I've watched enough zombie movies to fucking come across that dude's target. But
yeah, for real.
Then last week, a shitload of squad cars came around for him.
Oh, for
the
for
building
real?
That he lives in. They filled my street. So it was like 6 or 7 SUVs, cop SUVs. And I was like, oh my God. What's that about? And then, but I don't know if he was there. But they left. And then the next day, like 3 more cops show up and they leave. And I finally get to talk to my neighbor who I know knows the family in that house. And I was like, yo, so what the fuck's going on? Turns out, this like 35-year-old man, he's just on TikTok.
Okay.
He's just live streaming on TikTok
oh,
the whole time.
Okay.
That's it. That's all of it. He's shouting like for his stream and for the viewers. And
I wonder if he's like one of
that's it.
I wonder if he how much he's making doing that.
Oh,
they're giving him gifts, dude. Yeah.
Making. I don't think he's making anything.
He could be making money. Like if his, like people will watch
what's
that
his content,
shit.
I guess. I don't
dancing
understand.
In the street with a flashlight and yelling. People have you seen the NPC streamers on the street doing it? It's the same shit.
I guess. But I was like, you know, doing TikTok in public does look a lot like mental illness.
It does.
So that's kind of fascinating.
It absolutely 100% does.
He had actually been setting up some lights to do a video in an alleyway, and so, he was doing it against my neighbor's mom's house, which is behind my house. So this lady's like 85.
Damn.
And this big, tall man is shining lights in her house past 9 p.m., so she called the fucking cops, and he got fucking hauled
yeah,
off.
That'll do it.
And I'm like, I told her... I'm like, if you actually talk to this guy, maybe you should let him know that being a 6.5 foot tall black dude yelling yeah. random shit in the street at night is yeah. just a dangerous goddamn thing to do
that's
for himself.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
I'm like,
old white
dude,
people. Old white people see that shit.
Dude.
And
oh, I know. I was like, I'm like, scaring an old white lady is like the most lethal thing you
yeah,
can do.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm just like, you know, whatever. TikTok all you. I don't give a fuck. I don't care. I don't care. But also... you got to think about like the how you look, man.
Yeah,
like, you're playing a dangerous game. Could do it.
It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that we live in a world like that, but it is true.
Yes,
like you are.
It is true
because of the color of your skin and your size. Like you're immediately, terrifying to old white
yeah.
people.
Yes.
They will fucking call the police.
They will call, and the police will show up so fast. And blast
you. Oh, God, they'll blast you.
He got hauled off, but not charged. And I was like, what the fuck?
What's the point of that? Yeah, what's the point of that?
I think they were just kind of like, get away from that lady's house. Even though he's like, he's just over there. So they like took him like straight from his house, basically, to the police station, and they're like, stay away.
Dude, what?
Like,
well, I have to go back that way. Yeah. What do you want me to?
Like, I was like, they can do that? Just arrest you like that? And then just be like, ah, you're like, free to go.
Don't go back over there. And it's like, well, how am I going to get home?
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, that sounds like an illegal detention, but what's he going to do about it?
Also, so yeah, he's not like the cops would get in trouble for anything.
I've noticed that he moved his daytime or his screaming hours towards daytime.
Okay. Lately,
which is good. And I'm like, there you go, dude. That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. There's a guy that lives in the building next to
sucks.
Yeah. It sounds like it. There's a guy that lives in the building across the street from mine. And I actually haven't seen him out in a while. I wonder if he's dead. Pretty old dude, but he just stands on his balcony and like yells at people.
Oh yeah, that guy. Yeah.
Yeah,
he might be dead.
Incredible. Yeah. I forgot. You know, you've seen that guy. Yeah,
I have seen that.
And
guy,
then like,
yeah.
I haven't, because he used to like walk to Quick Trip or whatever, and he would like walk down the street for like a couple steps, and he would stop and then do a twirl, and then he would like do this with his hands, and then he would keep walking.
Oh,
and
man.
I was like,
I mean,
interesting.
That sounds rough.
Interesting,
man.
Sounds like a hard life.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's like, fuck, that sounds so exhausting and terrible.
Sounds incredibly exhausting.
And, you know, it's obviously scary and off-putting to people, and that makes your life shit, too. Like,
hard to fucking make friends and shit, but
luckily, my brain being fucked up isn't, like, that kind of fucked up.
Yeah,
so
mine just wants me to kill myself constantly.
Yes, me or others. You know?
Constantly.
That's fine. That's fine. I can work with that.
Yeah, it's rather unfortunate, but what are you going to do?
What are you gonna do?
I'm
selling that gun that I won. I shot it.
Oh yeah. The other one looked. Your other one looked cooler.
You know, so I posted that pic. It's funny because I sent that pic to my friends, and then I had a long talk with my real gun buddy about it, and he was like, obviously the HK, the VP9 is way cooler looking. And I was like, that's what I'm saying. When I sent that pic, I thought everyone was gonna agree, but they're all like, no, the 320 is cooler. Yeah. And I was like,
yeah.
All right, well.
Like,
okay.
I don't know. I think if the 320 didn't have the light under
the light, it really was carrying some.
If it didn't have the light under it, the V20 would have been cooler. But that light really fucking carried the shit out of it.
I just, the VP9, the thing that pissed me off is that it ejected every casing straight into my eyeball. That was getting old.
Yeah, that's a bit of a problem.
And I found out that's because it's a European gun, and they're like, oh, you're supposed to be using 124 grain NATO Euro loads.
Fuck,
we don't
you,
use 115
pussy.
Grain American loads. And I was like, oh,
dude,
my God, I hate
only
you,
American
HK.
Loads.
Oh, my God, I hate
only
you.
Only American loads.
I
want to
fire
here.
Fat American loads out of my European gun.
Yeah, I'm talking
thick. Fucking tell me not to.
Thick American lassos, dude. Fucking shooting ropes, brother.
It's like, you think you're better than me, HK.
You
piss me off. So I'm selling that one. But I will get my new gun comes in after my vacation. So
hell
that'll be sick.
Dude. You're going on
and
vacation.
That one I want.
Next week. So.
That will also be sick.
Yeah, that's fucking tough.
Oh, yeah, we're going to be off next week.
Yeah, we're not making content next week because Goose is going to be on vacation.
I will be playing D&D on my vacation. I could not pull recording the podcast
as well. That's
fair.
I mean, you know, I'm just the type of person that's always on their grind and like.
You are a big Sigma grind
guy. Yeah, big Sigma grind guy, very based, you know? So I don't really take vacations, but if that's like your MO, then by all means.
Yeah, if you like need a break, but like I'm not built like that.
I wouldn't think you're a pussy, but like. Other people might.
I desperately need the vacation.
Yeah, trust me. I feel
mind,
that.
Dude.
I fucking feel that.
Do you get vacation days?
I do. Yeah. Oh,
weird.
I've got like PTO and shit like that. Like I've got because I just never take time off, and part of it's not because I don't want. It's not really because I don't want to. Because I'm like. I'll like get it in my head. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna take the next couple days off just to like reset, and then I think about. Coming back to work from taking those days off and all the emails that are going to be waiting for me and like all the work that I'm going to miss. And I'm like, oh,
You know, I wanted to work to the goal of being the smart guy at work that everybody asks questions.
Never do that.
And I got Never there, do that. And I hate it. Never I'm like, oh my God, I've just spent all day answering everybody's stupid fucking questions.
It's so funny because we got a new manager at work, you know, last month or whatever, and she would talk to me, you know, sporadically, but we never got into, like, the logistics of the job or anything. It was just kind of, like, hi here and there. And then I had a meeting with somebody, and my supervisor was supposed to be in that meeting with me. My supervisor got called out, so that manager came in and sat in on the meeting, and I was like, I, like, wasn't prepared to run the meeting, because my supervisor usually does if we're in there together. But we started the meeting, and I just, like, was like, well, I guess I gotta fucking do this. So I just, like, started popping off with, like, asking questions and getting a lot into, like, you know, just the logistics of the job and the regulations that they have to follow. And then after the meeting, or before my super, that manager, because she got a better job offer like a couple weeks after she got hired. And yeah. And after that, before she left, we were talking, and she was like, yeah. I was like, well, I was like, I liked you. I think you're fucking pretty awesome. So it sucks that you're leaving. She's like, yeah, I can tell you know a lot more than you let on. And I was like, exactly. She was like, yeah, when we had that meeting together, I thought I was going to have to talk and take over, but I immediately figured out that you have everything taken care of and that you know way more than you let people know. And I'm like, yeah, because,
my pet peeve is when someone talks to me like they think I don't know something, yeah. And I'm like, I'm about to ruin your
dude. That's the only time I'll expose myself.
I want to make you feel stupid.
That's the only time I'll expose myself, especially if it's like somebody that not really a coworker, but like somebody I directly have to work with because of the job, and they're like, well, it's actually, and I'm like, oh, you sit the fuck down real quick, because let me learn you a thing or two,
dude. I have that happen all the time with people who are like way higher than me in the company.
Yeah,
and I just. Like, I'm not going to let them say wrong shit to me. I'm like, no, sorry. That's not true.
I get like extra feisty with it because at this job, I was baptized by fire. Like I was literally like baptized by fire to learn what I know now. And I'm like, let me mind fuck your thought pussy there for a second, guy, because I'm gonna fuck your shit up.
I recently stole at D&D your breakfast at Sniffin'.
Oh yeah, it's so good.
It went over it great. Hits every I was time. Like, oh, that one is killer. Yeah,
it'll hit every that time, dude.
I was like, I'm like, I've got to think of another one like that. I had a. Nah, I gotta work on it. I'm not ready to unveil it. I need some new names like that. I'll come up with, I love that too.
I'll jot down a few more. Yeah, breakfast at Sniffin's is like one of my favorite things.
The only one I had was Sniffer Picker Upper.
Yeah,
and I was
that's
like,
not bad.
I don't know if people will get it.
A little
breakfast at Sniffin's is
dead on. A little workshopping that one, and it might be a banger. But breakfast at Sniffin's is real, real.
Did we get any emails?
Oh yeah, let me check. Let me take a gizzy gander.
Someone I thought sent us a message, maybe. Someone did want to check on you.
Check on me.
they checked on, yeah, because there were tornadoes in Iowa, and I was like, Snacks is already he's playing games right this moment.
Yeah, at this current time.
Yeah, he's totally fine. But yeah, not much messages right now. So
no new emails, so
we're caught up,
dude. Fucking,
did you see?
Sorry,
yeah, what do you got?
Google,
no, it's yours.
Chrome updated on my computer, and I got home, and I was like, okay. So I got on my computer, and I was like, what the fuck is happening? Like, all my bookmarks were gone. Like when I started Chrome, it was like, oh, welcome to Chrome, and I'm like, this is wrong. And what's so happening? I'm like, like trying to fucking figure out what's going on, and Google Chrome updated, and it like, I don't know how, but switched my shit all around. So like, I have like 9 different emails, excuse me. And so it associated all the bookmarks on my Google Chrome. So like the Podbean bookmark and everything I use for content and all my login information that I've saved on my computer associated with the fucking Snacks advice email that I started because I was going to do that segment and then just got sidetracked. And now I have to log into that dumb bitch every time. I'm like, you fucking cunt, dude. Fuck you.
God.
Fuck you. So it pisses me off, bro. It makes me so angry.
Oh, yeah. Did you see that the former president of the United States, who is currently on trial for paying a porn star that he used to cover up during an election that he banged while his wife was pregnant with the child, got charged a whopping $9,000 in court for contempt for threatening judges and jurors in an active criminal trial?
Why don't you arrest him, bro? Like, why won't you arrest him?
I'm like, if I threaten the fucking judge, you think I'd ever see daytime again?
Fuck no.
Threaten the fucking jurors?
You're all spineless cowards. You're like, well, we can't arrest a former president. Yeah, you can. You definitely can. If this was like some other country, we'd just kill him. So I think arresting him is a good fucking alternative.
Why don't you ask Ceausescu what happens to corrupt former presidents, all right? They shot his ass on Christmas, okay? dude. I was like, and they were like, he was like, because the judge was like, hey, man, the fines are only, we can't scale them. So, next step we have is jail. And everyone's like, ooh, it's getting serious because you said there's going to be jail. I'm like,
you've said jail like a million times. Like, you're,
this man is not going to jail.
Yeah, you're like a fucking pushover mom who is like, oh, if you do it again, you're going to be in big trouble. And the kid keeps doing it and you just keep saying that. Like, you're all fucking cowards.
And I also hate the people who are like, this is leftist, not even fucking right wing. I don't listen to anything. Leftists are like, Donald Trump's trying to get sent to jail. I'm like, no, he isn't. He just acts like this all the time.
Yeah, that's just how he is. That's just his personality.
Oh my God, that's just who he is. He got told he can't do a thing, and that bothers him, so he wants to do it. That's it. He's a child.
He wants to do it. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And he's never had consequences for that, and he was the president.
Yeah.
He was the president.
No one's ever told him no, so he doesn't understand the concept of, I can't do this because I'm not allowed to.
So I think that he doesn't want to go to jail, and I think jail would fucking ruin him. I think he'd be so upset about being in jail.
I think he would be upset, but it's not like, I feel like nothing's going to, like, that would just really kind of, it would be cool to see him in jail, but also it just wouldn't, you know, be the proper jail experience, because he's going to be put in seg. He's not going to be in gym pop. Fuck no, they're not putting him in gym pop. No.
That would be so funny.
That would be hilarious. I would like to see the timeline where he goes to Gen Pop.
He's just in a room full of the poorest people he's ever smelled in his life. You know
how many people want to be like, I butt fucked a former president. So, like,
I mean, even just to fucking lay one on him would be badass.
That dude would get fucking jumped.
Give him
pieces.
The old Dick Cheney treatment where everyone gets their one free slap.
Mm-hmm.
That would be awesome.
But I also think
Trump taking one hit would send
kill
him to the shadow realm. Yeah,
yeah,
he'd
him.
Be turned to dust. Yeah, that man has never felt physicality in his life.
I wonder if he's ever been in like a fight. I doubt it.
No. Oh my God, no. Oh my God, no.
Yeah, I didn't think either.
No.
Yeah.
No. I had a really grim joke, but it's not good for the podcast. So.
Okay.
Remind me about it. Yeah, tell me off air.
Because going to military prep school and shit like that, I just don't think so.
Yeah, no. So that was happening. That's fun. Did you see the police siege Columbia University in New York, dude?
Oh, I did see that. Yes. Yeah. Dude.
See,
insane.
Dude, I can't believe that the mayor is like, yes, siege the building. And then I can't believe that the police are like, you know, they're like knocking heads of this like 50-year-old econ professor.
Yep.
And they're like, I am restoring order. Yeah. I'm like, do you
protect and serve. I'm about to serve you up a fucking knuckle sandwich if you don't fucking stop peacefully protesting, you piece of shit.
They're literally just saying their beliefs, and the police are like absolutely
fuck
not.
Fuck you.
Loading a tear gas grenade launcher that they're going to shoot right in their face. Like,
yeah,
get the
dude,
fuck
directly
out
in the face.
And I'm just like, when you see the police getting in a siege tower, I'm like, do you think maybe we have too much stuff for the police?
Yeah, I would say,
like,
do you
this
think
is crazy.
Maybe the police have, I don't know, too much military equipment?
It's like, I'm just like, the police We need to be able to beat them.
I know.
We don't want the police to have all of the power.
There's no reason. Like, my thing. There's no reason that police need, like, a fully armored...
MRAP.
Yeah, a fully armored MRAP, because...
A mine-resistant vehicle?
If there is a situation that calls for the police to enter somewhere where there's armed suspects, they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. It's literally
why they staged the school, because no one had a fucking gun.
And it's there. Yeah. That MRAP is like a $2 million shield. That's all it is. It's like for them to park in the parking lot and stand behind and hope to God that the person inside with a gun murdering children gives up.
Dude, yeah. Oh, wow. MRAPs are less than $1 million, which
I thought so. Yeah, yeah.
I thought they would be a fortune. I don't know. I mean, military. Fuck it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, we just give that to. And I'm like, also, if the police are in a situation where they are being landmined, they deserved it.
That's true.
That's crazy. They probably deserved it. That's insane. Yeah,
if we're in a situation where the police are being landmined, we're far gone.
The police. Yeah.
We're in a civil war at that point.
Yeah.
Because I mean, unless fucking excuse me, old goddamn Boo Radley is hunkering down in his house and puts landmines all around his property, then which would be hilarious, dude. Can you imagine? Like
this. Did you hear? Speaking of which, that you hear about that guy who sieged the officers. He killed four officers. He killed a marshal.
What?
It was in Charlotte. Yeah, they went to serve a warrant. He lit up eight cops, killed four of them.
Were they at his house?
Yeah, they were serving a warrant.
And his house. Yeah. They just threw the door, or he was just like fucking.
I don't know. They don't want to tell.
They don't want to tell.
They really don't want to talk about
it. That guy really got the drop on us. We can't let people know. Yeah. Damn, that's crazy. Holy shit. Fucking.
And I'm like,
blasting four cops is insane, bro.
They called it an attack against the U.S. officers, and I'm like,
not quite. Well,
they were serving a warrant, and in a way, they were a little bit attacking him.
It's a counterattack.
They said the biggest one since 2016, the deadliest since 2016. I think the other one would have been that Texas shooter, right?
Which one's the Texas shooter?
There was that guy who's just hunting cops in Texas.
Oh, yeah. If I remember, I think so. Was that Texas?
2016. What happened in 2016?
A lot.
I can't. Yeah. That's weird. But yeah, it said task force made up of officers from different agencies arrived at the residential neighborhood to try to capture Terry Clark Hughes Jr. His name was Terry Clark. Who was wanted for possession of a firearm by an ex-felon. I'm like, you guys have got to calm down. Yes, possession of a felon owning a gun is bad. But I'm like, what did you... There was no other version of events that could have happened where this guy didn't shoot all of these people. I would say
also, maybe if you know the guy has a gun, don't show up to his house. Maybe wait for him to leave and, like, pull him over or, like, something like that.
Dude, two of them were Department of Adult Corrections.
What? Really?
And dude, they were... I'm like, you guys, whenever a warrant's coming, they're like, I just want everyone.
I'm like, why? Why are you there?
What the fuck are you there?
Yeah, you are the after he gets arrested thing.
U.S. Marshal, a Charlotte cop, and two adult corrections officers.
Damn,
shot.
What the fuck?
Killed.
What did he shoot them with?
He had an AR and a 40 handgun, which is probably just a Glock.
Yeah. Damn, he fucking.
It's. Let's see. I love how they're like, the AR-15 allowed the shooter to unload several rounds towards our officers within a matter of seconds. I'm like, first of all, several doesn't sound like a ton.
Yeah.
And what were you guys carrying?
Dude, for real. And like...
the same thing?
I'm like, that's what like baffles me about the... Like, you know, I'm all for, you know, make it harder. I guess not make it like super difficult for people to get guns, but like put more background checks or whatever. I'm all for that. But also like... I can unload the same amount of rounds with a pistol. It just maybe
and
even
also,
faster.
If the police can have it, I should be.
Yeah, if
to
the
have
police
it.
Can have it, Full I on. Can have it. Yeah.
Yes, I want agree. A tear. You can also you can buy a tear gas launcher.
Oh, can you?
Yeah, you can. Yeah,
that's pretty tight.
Yes, you just get in trouble for using it. They don't, which pisses. That's why I've always said, like, police, when we do sieges with the police, like big riots and stuff, everyone should have the same stuff. We should be shooting tear gas at each other.
Yeah.
Shooting rubber bullets at each other. Big foam 40 mics at each other.
That'd be the beanbags.
Oh, that'd be totally fair. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You think those beanbags are fun, Mr. Officer?
No, yeah. How do you, even in your fucking body armor? I saw a video that was like, that was these cops and they were detonating old dynamite that they found. And they were wearing like OCP camo and like plate carriers and stuff like that. And I'm like, why are you, why do you look like you're like in Fallujah right now, dude?
It's fucking a Hawaiian t-shirt. I'm drinking a beer. Like, yeah, blowing up dynamite.
Yeah, dude. Like, you're so fucking,
everyone's wearing, I'd show up and everyone's wearing their plate carriers. Like, what I got, are we like, doing?
Flip flops on. Yeah, yeah, for real. I'm like, dude, like, why do you guys, you just want, you want to go to war with people in the States. Like, that's like, you're cosplaying as a soldier.
They do.
And you're not a fucking soldier. You're a public servant. Act like one.
Yeah, they do. They love that they're fighting a war. They feel like big, strong brothers.
Want to be victimized so bad.
They said, officers going down in the line of fire who have gone down in the act of trying to keep our community safe. You have wildly endangered the neighborhood. Like, you guys were shooting guns all over the neighborhood. You pulled up on a warrant in a busy neighborhood with a guy you knew had a gun.
Like I said, I'm like, he wasn't, I wonder what that guy's initial felony was for, but.
Dude, and that, even in the article, they said, she said Hughes was an electrician. This was like a cousin of him.
Yeah.
She said he was an electrician for more than 15 years. He posted short videos of complex electrical wiring on his LinkedIn profile. Despite past struggles with the law, it seemed to her like Hughes had been straightening his life out. That's what they said. And, like, the cops probably corner him, and he's like, all right, it's fucking done then,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And they, like, made it so much worse.
Uh-huh. And, like, again, you know, you decided to do this in a populated neighborhood when you could have easily have just, like, tailed them, pulled them over, and
Dallas.
Fucking,
it was the Dallas. Yeah, it was. It was Dallas. In Texas. It was in the 2016 shooting.
Oh, okay.
Army Reserve Afghan War veteran Micah Johnson was angry over police shootings of black men, so he killed police officers. I'm just saying, he's actually solving the
That's
problem.
Crazy. I'm just saying. If anyone's gonna do it, that guy was equipped to fucking go at it.
That was the one that they killed with the bomb. They blew that dude up with a bomb. They put it on an EOD robot and bombed him.
Pussies.
Which was the first time, and almost certainly not the last, that the police used a robot to kill somebody.
Yeah, dude, and also, like, what happened to your fucking, you know, $1 million bulletproof vehicle? And your goddamn fucking plate armor that you wear every... Like, I understand, you know, having a second chance vest, but, like, full-on plate carriers and everything, what happened to all that? You guys can't take down one man with a gun?
Dude, I'm like, I love the conversation to be like, you know what? We need a brick of C4 right now.
We'll take it out. We'll handle this right now.
Like, you're a police officer and you're like, God, if we could just get some C4. And everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
If you said that like 60 or like, you know, 20, 40 years ago, they'd be like, what the fuck are you, like, go in there and get him. But now it's like, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's just blow him up. Just fucking blow them up.
Wait, hold on. I think we've talked about this. What was it? The MOVE bombing. You know about that one?
I don't think so.
That was when MOVE was this movement. I can't remember what they were called or what they were doing. It was, hold on. They were a Christian movement for life, a communal Christian group, right? It was a church commune in Philadelphia. They got into a standoff with the police.
Nice.
And so the police got in a helicopter and dropped bombs on the fucking house.
That's crazy.
That's how they did it. And then they stopped the firefighters from stopping the fire. Nice. They let the fire spread. It burned two city blocks and left 250 people homeless.
When was that?
Don't you feel so protected and served? 1985.
Damn.
Not a long time ago.
Corrected on my statement of 20 years ago. I recant.
They killed five kids with that.
That's crazy, dude.
Don't you feel so protected and served?
You guys, that's like Avenger level, like destruction of a city trying to take out one guy.
They're like, we have to do this
for the good of mankind. We're gonna blow these kids up. So go ahead.
That was the Philadelphia Police Department.
That's
like,
crazy.
What? Why are they dropping bombs?
Because
I'm also like, what? What? Do they drop? You know what I mean? I'm like, do they have like a timer?
Yeah, I wonder that too. Is it like a delayed timer grenade or is it like legit?
Police used more than 10,000 rounds of ammunition. Oh my God. Two 1.5-pound Tovex, which is a dynamite substitute, combined with 2 pounds of FBI-supplied C4. Well, at least the FBI is the ones who own the C4, not cops,
cops just don't have access to C4. They got to go through the FBI.
The cops are like, hey, Mr. FBI, man, can we get, like, C4? And they're like, here you go.
You don't even have to, just sign this form. Sign it out.
Oh, it said the bombs exploded after 45 seconds, so it was a timer. Well, how do they make that? What is that?
I mean,
is that a standard issue, like, timer bomb that we have?
I mean, I would imagine if they're using C4, they just have to make, like, some kind of delayed current timer. And drop it and fucking hope to God they don't get their hands on it and throw it back or something before. That'd be hilarious, though, if, like, they
burned 61 homes, killed 11 people with that. Good God.
Protect and serve, baby. Number
good
one.
Good God. This may come as a surprise to you. MOVE was a black liberation organization.
Oh, you don't say.
And the Philadelphia police, they were like, they're terrorists.
And maybe to drive the point home, did the police get in trouble for burning down a bunch of city blocks and killing a bunch of people?
No.
Yeah.
No,
I didn't think so. Never would happen in a good white neighborhood. You know what I'm saying?
They did. Hold on. The Philadelphia City Council did approve a resolution to formally apologize for bombing them.
Oh, you know what? That fixes it. That fixes it.
Oh, a jury awarded the residents nearby $13 million against the city of Philadelphia, so the cops don't.
So the jury was like, here's all the money that you pay in taxes. You can have some of it back, I guess, for the cops, like, burning your house down or whatever.
That story is... I'm gonna cover that story, guys. The villains of the Philadelphia PD for
angry.
That one.
I think lawsuits against police officers who...
It needs to be out of their fucking money or the union.
It needs to be out of their pension. It needs to be out of the fucking police pension.
I'm so sick of us paying for the cops to throw bombs at people, and it's bad.
If you went to, like, any employer and was like, hey, I'm going to fuck up this, like, I'm in a factory, I'm going to break this equipment, and then you're going to pay for it
to
fix it. They would be like, you're high. Get out of here.
Can you not do that? And you're like, I see no other way.
Yeah, literally no other way. Can't do it.
I'm like... Like, it's a siege, right? Like, the they can't stay in there forever.
Yeah,
they
starve them out.
Just wait a little instead of bombing a city block. Like, am I crazy? Am I fucking crazy?
No, we need to get them out of there now, actually.
They're just like, but we're wearing the suits. We got the guns. Let's go do something.
I already signed the paperwork for the C4. I can't bring it back.
I can't unwire this.
Yeah, the FBI is going to think I'm dumb if I bring this C4 back. I'll be embarrassed. Oh, man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's
the headline. I mean, I don't have a ton of headlines, really. I don't know. There hasn't been that much going on.
I watched that movie Lucy with Scarlett Johansson.
No shit, really? Yeah. First time seeing it?
Yes, it was my first time seeing it.
It's so stupid. It's so dumb. Movie.
Like, the concept, you know, cool. I could see the concept being cool, but it was executed very poorly.
It was stupid.
Yeah, I'm just like... I don't know. It just was fucking corny.
We only use 10% of our brain movie, right?
Yeah.
Which isn't true, Morgan Freeman. I love that myth is so funny to me. So many people believe that we adapted to have like one of the biggest brains for our size in all of Animal Kingdom, and we just don't use it.
We don't use it at all. That's insane.
That's so stupid.
But yeah, it was not good.
That movie had a $40 million budget and made $470 million.
Damn.
That's crazy.
Damn.
The praise was given for its themes, visuals, and Johansson's performance. Many critics found the plot nonsensical, especially focusing on the 10% brain myth. Yeah, well, you don't say. Yeah, it was cool. There was cool stuff.
Yeah,
I remember the scene where she, like, her brain works 100%, yeah. And that was, like, really cool. That, like, wasn't there a bit where she, like, sees the Big Bang or some shit?
Yeah, she's like, yeah, essentially, yes. And she's, like, building a supercomputer with her mind, and, like, there's these, like, trindles that come out and everything, and that part was pretty sick, but I was just like, okay, so you're running away from these Asian gangsters, and you're able to transmit your mind waves to TVs and everywhere else.
That's
and you're
like a stupid man.
And you're able to like levitate people and stuff like that, but you're like, I'm gonna send this like regular ass cop to fight, like get a shootout with like 9 people.
And, we already know the police send whole tanks for children, you know. Like,
but he's a French cop, so it's like, you know, he ain't got that. He's got a fucking pistol, and that's it. But he's like, I'm like, why don't you just make all the people chasing you go to sleep like you did a million times in that movie, and then go about your business with Mr. Professor Morgan Freeman?
Good question. Yeah.
It's not conducive to the plot. Fucking
yeah. I can't believe how big this movie was. Like, I couldn't find 5 people who remember it.
Yeah, or
it made like $500 million.
I don't remember like people ever talking about it, because I watched another movie that I thought that I got the names mixed up. There was this other movie about this like spy killer assassin lady who is like the same level of hotness as Scarlett Johansson, so that's why I got it mixed up. And
Is that one with Megan Fox? Is that what you're thinking of?
No, I don't think so.
Megan Fox is spy movie. That one I tried to watch and didn't end up watching because Hulu just swapped the movies on me. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I do remember. Yeah, I remember you telling me that.
I looked up Megan Fox spy movie. They're like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That's the one you want.
I don't think that's what I was talking about. No.
I looked up. So I think maybe Salt was the one I'm thinking of.
Rogue is the movie I'm thinking of.
Let's say Netflix.
Salt. Salt is what you're thinking of.
So I watched the movie Anna.
Was Salt with Angelina Jolie?
I think, yeah, hold on. Salt
movie. Yes.
So I was getting Lucy mixed up with Salt. Like, I was like, oh, this is a movie where she's a cool, badass assassin. And then, or whatever.
The cast of Salt is crazy. They got Angelina Jolie, Lee Schreiber, and Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Damn.
I actually don't know how to pronounce his name. I could have mutilated that. I've never looked it up. All these, I don't know. I feel like we don't make movies like this anymore.
No.
I think we made $300 million off a $100 million budget.
Damn.
We just don't make, like, I don't know. These kind of movies now are made by Netflix for $25 million, and they just don't hit.
They don't hit.
It's not the same.
It's something about it, like, it just feels so, like, there's something missing. I don't know what it is, but it feels like there's something
missing. Well, the big thing is, they're not big. They're not big production movies anymore. Yeah. Like, no one's throwing Michael Bay money anymore. That's the thing.
Yeah, it's true.
I just saw the movie. So I went on Sunday to go see The Mummy. They're doing a rescreening of it in theaters right now. So I went and saw it in the theaters. And I was, like, halfway through that movie, and I'm like, so, like, when does the Scorpion King get here? And he does not. It's not that movie.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, I actually don't remember The Mummy at all. So it was like kind of a fresh new movie for me because all my memories of it were the Scorpion King.
There's a meme that I really like that's like, because there's a scene in The Mummy where this dude is like scrambling to like get some stuff out of a desk, and then he's like throwing papers everywhere. And he's like, and then Brendan Fraser walks in, and Brendan Fraser like, spring cleaning, and then the guy tries to run away and throws a chair at him. And the meme that I really like is that scene, but it's like me trying to get my spring cleaning done before the guy who throws a chair at me for not doing my spring cleaning gets here.
Oh, that's good. That but that movie came out in 1999. Which made me feel old because I learned when I was looking it up that George of the Jungle came out in 1997. And I was like, oh.
I did not know. Yeah, that doesn't.
God. But I was just like, we really don't make movies like this anymore. Like, that movie feels like such an old-timey movie.
Yeah.
Comparatively. Like, it's got this, like, very active, like, Indiana Jones kind of score to it and, like, big set pieces,
Well, I think part of it could also be that, like, back in those times, the idea of Hollywood was very, like, mystical. You know, you're like, this is where they make movies. You go to Hollywood to make movies. This movie is made in Hollywood. And when movies would come out, you're like, okay, this movie was, you know, might not have been made in Hollywood, but your perception of it is like, it was made in Hollywood. Yeah. Here's all the, like, the fantastic ideas I've conjured up in my head that happens when you make a movie like this. But now, you know, we're much more aware of how movies are made and, like, Netflix and everything like that. So we're just like, oh, this is just some fucking shit that they, you know, queefed out just, on a fucking weekend.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Dude, literally, though. Like, that's the thing. Netflix turned it into a real science, and that's not fun.
Yeah, it's not fun
at all. No. Like, Hollywood used to be like, I don't know, let's make a crazy fucking movie about dinosaurs and see if everybody likes it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it was like the biggest movie, guys.
Yeah,
you know?
And now Netflix is like
I know we only need to spend $36 million to get an equivalent value of $70 million out of the entire process. We'll make it in 6 weeks, go.
Check the taste clusters. Or, like, those movies where it's, like, we only had, like, $700,000 and we have no idea what to do, and it turns out to be, like, an incredible movie, whereas, like, Netflix is like, we're going to throw $100 million at every movie we make. So here is a CGI filled shoot 'em up, blast everything and blow up everything movie that just feels like, you know, lackluster. You know, you see one of them, especially Netflix made ones, you're like, I've seen them all. So,
yeah, I mean, well, kind
one
of,
movie, well,
yeah.
Well,
Netflix is like 1 in 10.
Netflix released movies. Like, once you see one of them that's like an action-packed one, you're like, I've seen kind of most of them.
I still like Gray Man.
Dude, I love Gray. I actually just rewatched Gray Man the other night. I love that movie. Dude, yes.
Fucking time.
I fucking love that movie. I was literally just about to bring Gray Man up because Ryan Gosling's in another movie that just came out called, I think, Fall Guy, where he is a stuntman, and I really want to see it.
It's called Fall Guy? Oh, yeah, it is. So, the Fall Guy.
Yeah, where he's a stuntman.
I want to see that real bad.
Dude, it looks really
good. I love Ryan Gosling.
If, like, honestly, man, out of all the celebrities, like,
if he came out with, like, if he did something bad, I would be
a little upset. I would be quite upset, yeah. Or, like, I just feel like he's a super cool guy to, like, hang out with, and just, he just seems super chill.
And he'd probably think I was super cool.
Yeah, and we'd be like friends or whatever. We'd go outside and have a catch or whatever. Dude.
Yeah. Yeah. He'd read this letter that I wrote him. It'd be perfect. How long we been gabbing?
42 minutes.
Oh, wow. Damn. All right. You haven't gone and seen Civil War yet, have you?
No, I haven't. I haven't. I need to. I know.
It doesn't come out on theaters until... it doesn't come out in streaming until July 9th.
Damn, really?
I was like, that's like one of the longest movie to streaming pipelines I've seen in forever.
Usually it's like, it's like... the next week it's out on streaming. Did we already talk about Late Night with the Devil? We did, didn't we?
I haven't seen it yet. I need to watch it.
I feel like there was something that I watched that
I've been supposed to live texting about. My buddy while I've been watching Attack on Titan.
Oh, and yeah.
It's been Dude, there were some scenes in the last recent episodes that, like, made me stand up. I was so hyped. I was like, fucking fuck. Yeah. That was so fucking damn anime cool. Damn. And then I, like, three text, like, in the same episode, I texted him. I was like, I hate this show, dude. I'm sick of this bullshit.
Fuck this
because
shit.
They had, like, the guy, one of the guys that they've been trying to get this whole time. And this dude has dodged death. They actually, like, had this dude at death's door twice this episode, and they still let him get away.
Damn,
and I'm like,
you.
Fuck this.
Damn you.
That's, like, five times that they've, like, had a blade in his throat, and they still let him go. And I'm like, this is stupid.
How dare you?
Oh, it made me so mad. Yeah, but it's pretty cool.
That's right.
Cool.
Good.
Yeah.
I haven't really, like I said, been watching a ton, like shows. I really haven't found a show that I'm, like, wanting to pick back up or just, like, watch.
Did you watch Shogun?
I did, yeah. I don't think I've seen the last episode, but I did watch. I need to watch the last
episode. Got rave reviews.
Oh, it's great.
I think
great.
I might watch that
really
once I'm
good.
Done with Attack on Titan. Yeah.
It's really, really good.
I think that's what I want to watch.
There's a Netflix show out right now. I think it's like, oh, it's something Gentleman or something like that that I've been thinking
the
about.
The dead
watching.
Guy, the, what is it? The dead guy detectives, the dead boy.
I've seen what you're talking about. Yeah.
Is that what you're talking? That's not
no,
what you're talking
no,
about.
No. Netflix show Gentleman.
I don't remember.
It's called The Gentleman. It's a comedy series. The Gentlemen.
Men.
Yeah.
Not 2019. 2024.
What's that
you,
movie?
This is a spinoff of that movie. Okay.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, that's what it says.
Then there was also the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
I want to see that.
I want to see that, yeah.
Henry Cavill makes my loins.
Yes. Real frothy. And then I watched, sorry, I forgot to, we didn't talk about this, it was a while back, but I watched, I didn't finish it because I got really hyped, but I watched most of the movie Free Fire. And
that movie rocks,
it was really funny too, because it's just like,
that's the kind
place.
Of movie I could never get my ex to watch because it is a 90-minute gunfight.
It is,
and,
yeah, it's nothing.
And
but,
I'm like, but that's awesome.
It's badass, dude.
It's great. That is a really good movie. I've been meaning to watch that again. Have you been reading anything? I literally just 30 minutes ago finished Under the Banner of Heaven.
No, so I haven't.
You've been off it.
I know. I've just been like because usually I'll like do it at work, but like work's been so fucking busy that I just haven't had the opportunity to be able to sit down and just read something. But I need to look through my recommendations and see what books are.
Oh man. There was one book someone recommended me. I'm sorry, whoever it was, please message me again. I don't remember who it was. You had a good recommendation that I was like, I'll look into this for the two of us. And is there a way to look through your messages, like by search?
They're on Instagram? There should be.
Yeah. Is it that search bar up top?
Yeah. I didn't know Audible had badges. Oh my God.
Someone wanted us to do, they loved us talking about horror movies, and they said they wanted us to do a season of talking about horror movies.
That'd be cool.
And I was like, we kind of just do that every episode all the time.
Yeah, but
anyway,
turning it into an actual, like, season, that would be one I'd be, like, excited to do notes for.
I don't know how we'd format it, but we could talk about it. I'm not against it.
Yeah, we could definitely find a way to format it.
I'm not against it. But the other one problem is, they're so spooky.
They are spooky. Your spooky threshold is very
scared.
Low.
Very dude, my low. Friend, I was talking to my buddy who is like, you know, he's a kind of a traditional man's man sort of. He was in the army and he loves the Lord and he has a child. He likes the outdoors and mowing his lawn.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, I don't watch scary movies. They're too spooky. I was like, oh,
that's
no
crazy.
Shit.
That is crazy to me.
He's like, no, they make me very scared. I was like, oh, okay, well, fair enough.
Yeah, because I used to like, he used to tell me how you just don't like scary movies because they're spooky. And then what was that one you told me to watch? The Asian one. girl, you need to go.
Not Gonjiam.
No, not Gonjiam. It was like, fuck, I can't even think of it now.
Was it Korean?
Yeah. I'm almost certain. Because right? you were like, this is like one of the scariest movies I've ever seen. And I was like, oh, shit, okay. And then we watched, well, because I recommended Gonjiam to you. That's why, yeah, Gonjiam for me. And then I watched it, and I was like, damn, this is not really that scary at all. Fuck, what was it called?
I have no idea.
The Wailing. I think it was The Wailing.
I think I misremembered The Wailing. Wait, that's the one with the devil in it, right? You weren't scared of that movie?
No.
That movie's so scary.
It was really good, though. It was great.
It's a really good movie.
It was really good. I just didn't think it was that scary. But, like, it, you know, I...
Yeah, me neither. Me neither. It's just spooky.
It was a really good movie, though. I really enjoyed it.
It's funny, Lizzie said she won't watch. The movies that make her the scared are demon movies because of her Christian upbringing.
And oh, I was
like,
no shit. Hey,
it's
man.
Just like, it's like my buddy who won't watch alien movies because aliens could be real. Yeah, I'm like, what do you do?
I mean, demon movies are kind of what scares me the most, too, because I think that, like, you know, like, I fully believe in that shit or whatever. But, like, that's why.
It pisses me off because I don't believe in them at all, and they spook me. And I'm like, ghosts aren't even fucking real.
That's why I like the Insidious. Movies are like some of my favorite movies. Well, like the first couple, like, scared the shit out of me when I first saw them. And there's
what about her? I mean, Hereditary.
Hereditary, though. Yeah, obviously. Hereditary is an incredible, incredible movie.
That's why Lizzie won't watch a movie with me. I'm like,
really?
Come on, it's the
so
best.
Good. It's just good.
She's like, are you scared of it? I'm like, oh, deeply. Deeply. It will probably be the last time I ever watch that movie if I watch it with you.
Horrifying.
It's horrifying.
But yeah, the Insidious movie scared me because I was like I, you know, I fully believe in like astral projecting and shit like that. And so like I was like, damn, like that's fucking terrifying. But yeah, demon also, movies scare me the most.
My last bit of good news was that because I follow a lot of industry news. McDonald's is finally feeling the fucking heat, and they released I was reading their quarterly report because I think they missed earnings, and they were like, yeah, so poor people can't afford our food anymore.
Oh,
and we kind of need to fix that. Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, well, because I was literally like, is there an end game to this, or will everything just get more expensive?
Like,
poor people can't even afford McDonald's anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but yeah.
Even the corporations are like, I guess poor people need to buy stuff too.
Yeah,
so.
We gotta
maybe some relief on the horizon.
Gotta help the poors, I guess. You know, the people that buy their food. Yeah, yeah, we absolutely should.
I'm the dickhead, so I'm covering. I get to start.
Yeah,
which
you get
is
to go
fun.
First.
I'm excited about this story. Oh, my God. Someone literally right now, Mr. Thank You, messaged us that another fucking Boeing whistleblower died.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, my God.
I watched The Accountant. That's what it was. I watched The Accountant.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good, right?
Good movie.
It's good. It's like
Ben Affleck plays a really good autist. He plays a really good autist. Yeah, yeah.
It was good.
Yeah,
it was
a fun
movie. And we won't go too much into it. My favorite thing about it is that he didn't date that lady.
Yeah, no, he just left.
No. But also, he was like, "Here you go. Here's a priceless painting."
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was like, "That is fucking useless for her, dude. Like, she cannot sell that.
No, not at all.
You stole it." But anyway, so I am starting us off with the spice of our sugar and spice season, and I decided to get a little creative with it. So I'm covering the story of Charles J. Guiteau, and if you know the story of Charles J. Guiteau, you're fucking nerd, and just shut up, and you probably don't know all the details, so just listen. It's a good story. Do you know who that is?
No.
All right, good. So, Charles, we'll start it off, we always do, with their terrible little lives. When they were born, fourth of six children, born in Freeport, Illinois, September 8th, in the year of our Lord, 1841. His mom died when he was eight, naturally, presumably from crumbling into dust after producing six children in the early 19th century.
You will have that on the big jobs.
Yeah, you will. He grew up under a very religious father who traditionally beat him often and his other children
religious
to ensure the
do.
Lord's love. Yeah, I mean, that's how you learn about the Lord's love.
Through violence.
So when he was nine, he moved with his family to Wisconsin, living there until 1855, when he returned back to Freeport with just his dad. So Guto was a bit of that Sigma grind set kind of guy. So he did what every cool Wall Street bro does and the first step to success, which was receive a large inheritance.
Nice.
He got $1,000 from his dead grandpappy, which now is about $35K. So he went to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor to learn things. He failed the entrance exams because he was just beat by his Christian father instead of being taught anything.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, so he went to the high school nearby to start cramming algebra and French, and I was like, wait, what? Just went to high school?
Yeah.
I don't understand how school worked back then. But all the while keeping in touch with his father. And then he just gave up. It was hard, and he didn't want to do it.
You know, when things are too hard, sometimes you just got to quit.
Sometimes the best move is a tactical and strategic retreat.
Yeah, always.
So he fucked off to Oneida, New York to join a religious commune.
Hell yeah.
Philadelphia police do not bomb. It sounds a little weird, but at the time, there were tons of Christian communes going around. You know, the class sort of from each their ability to each their need. Like, I mean,
back in those times, like, you know, a religious commune was all the rage.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It's pretty standard, run-of-the-mill thing. It did have a few weird bits, and this is important. The details about this are important to understand the kind of man that Charles Guiteau is.
Okay.
So, for one thing, they practice Christian perfectionism, which just the name alone makes you sound lame.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're lame. Like, you're definitely getting picked last in the beer drinking team, yeah, at the very least.
It also sounds incredibly unattainable.
Christian perfectionism is just what it sounds like. Don't do a single anything that isn't for the Lord. No Yorkin', Pangus Hanglin', pornogs, or whiskey sipping.
No Jorkin' it, huh? That sucks.
No Jorkin'. No Jorkin' your peanuts. So to further this goal, they would have a weekly meeting where everyone in the commune would take a turn being focused on by the rest of the commune, and everyone would just shout all the stuff they did that wasn't perfect.
I feel like I've heard this story, or I've heard like that part of it for some reason triggers a memory for me that like I remember hearing a story about this, but I don't know.
So
always good for your self esteem, is getting in a circle and let everybody in your commune.
Everyone you care about telling you what sucks about you. When I was growing up, we just called that family dinner.
But, yeah,
you know, they had like a whole thing for it. it does sound a little fun, I wrote, but very unhealthy.
Yeah, very, very unhealthy.
So they also made people apply for fuck permits to make babies. Where the commune decided if they were a good spiritual match.
They're fucking hangling their panglesses, and someone comes in, it's like license or registration. You gotta license for that thing.
Hold on. This is for making babies.
Okay.
So they would get it, and then the community would decide if they were a good spiritual match, then they'd make a baby, and after a year they would take the baby from them and they would be raised by the commune.
Naturally.
Weird.
Naturally.
I personally, if I was in this situation, I would just be like, I just didn't do it right. I think we need to try to make that baby.
Yeah,
again,
try it, you know? One more time. One more go.
So here's what's different about it. So that sounds normal, what you would expect for a Christian perfect church.
Yeah, absolutely.
They actually fuck freely.
Oh, okay.
It's just baby making that's
bad. Oh, okay.
Yeah, anyone could fuck anyone. I bet you didn't see that coming.
No.
No gays allowed, though, which
naturally.
You probably did see coming. Yeah.
Naturally. Keep them gays out of our religion.
Yeah.
Trump 2024, sorry.
Monogamous exclusive relationships were discouraged, and the man wasn't allowed to bust.
How is
them's,
that?
Them's the rules.
How is that possible? I don't.
Because if the man's busts, that's a sin. You're wasting seed. As the Lord said,
you can't be shooting lassos for the Lord.
Yeah, yeah. Either that goes right in the baby maker, or it doesn't come out at all.
You keep that shit in there.
The ladies, however, were encouraged to bust nut, which is. Think about it. A lady in the 1850s finding a cult that's dedicated to making her have orgasms, gotta be one of the rarest things in the whole world at the time. They would even use old ladies who couldn't get pregnant to teach the young bucks how to make fucks without making babies, which I was like,
yeah.
Dicey.
Yeah. here's some old lady titties. Probably a minor child. Yeah.
Okay. So, I gotta say, kind of a gold mine for 1800s Colts.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for our antagonist, Charles is not a well-liked man.
Oh, I'd say.
Public criticisms of him were plentiful and spirited.
Oh,
and
dude, I bet his shouting circles were brutal.
People like spit flying out of their mouth. He got zero free fuck.
Oh.
Like from.
Damn.
In the game, no one wanted to touch his pangas.
Yeah, how fucking bad do you have to suck?
He's the only dude in this hippie Christian commune of free fucking that no one wants. Like, that's brutal.
Dude, you could find another commune, my boy. You don't have to stay there.
Oh, yeah? Well, so, our boy isn't... He could pick up on a hint after a while. So, everyone in the commune eventually started calling him Charles J. Get Out.
God damn it. Get the fuck out.
Get him
out.
To leave the fucking cult.
That's crazy.
And he left pretty quickly after enduring a brief 5 years of not being liked in this cult. It's like, God, dude.
They're like shouting mean things at him. Like, even when they're not in the circle, they're just shouting mean things. And he was like, man, I'm starting to get the feeling that they might not
want me around.
It's like
year 4. Yeah. No one's touched his penis. So, he was like, all right, I can pick up on a hint. So
I get your message loud and clear, okay?
He leaves on what was probably one of the most celebrated days in that community.
Yeah.
And moves back to Hoboken, New Jersey, and tries to start an Oneida-themed like newspaper, which wasn't successful. No one cared. Everyone's like, whatever.
Yeah.
A bizarre choice. Then he came back.
Holy shit.
And he tried to sue them for his unpaid labor, which did not go anywhere.
I can't imagine you guys have time and labor sheets you're filling out.
So then he moved to Chicago, just past the bar.
How?
And became a lawyer because he was a white man in the 1800s and you could get a career back then simply by showing up. They're like, here you go. Here's a packet. In that, you can choose if you want to be a doctor, an engineer, or a lawyer. You just pick
take
one of, the
one
forms,
of those boxes.
he was predictably a terrible lawyer, and he only argued a single case that he lost. So he got into bill collecting, which is what we call knee breaking.
Okay. Nice.
It was there that he developed familiarity with the entire debtor system and how it worked and its inner machinations. So he just started stealing a lot of the money that he was supposed to be collecting.
As you do.
And also he just stopped paying his bills because he knew how debtors would find him. So he's like, I've beat the system.
You know what they say? Always steal from the people that you're collecting for who if they're loaning out large sums of money, they definitely can't have dark connections that could get you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So we learned all of this, this part, the details of this come from a librarian that he married that year, 1869, named Annie Bunn. And, maybe someone finally touched his penis.
Yeah,
presumably.
Spangled.
Next, he moved to New York City, mostly to flee all of his pissed off clients and the debt that he's racking up.
Okay.
And you know what? Like, this is the spice. I'm covering the spice. Like, debt evasion and being a lame cult member, it's not the worst.
Not the worst thing we've had.
He sucks. Yeah. He sucks, but there's more. So, this is when he decides, and this is very natural evolution within his career, he decides to turn his attention and genius intellect to politics. Naturally. So he supported Horace Greeley, who was anti-Reformation Democratic candidate for president, which he had he demonstrated his support for him by writing a terrible speech that he just read aloud a single time, like on a street corner. And this is the most critical part of understanding like what a narcissist moron this dude is, because he did this single speech and believed that this would make the Horace Greeley administration indebted to him. Like, if they win, they're like, obviously we got it because of Charles Discuto's war. Incredible speech. And so he would be granted his dream position as the ambassador to Chile. I don't know.
A weird dream position.
I couldn't find for the life of me why he picked Chile.
Aim for the stars, I guess.
I don't know. So the Grant was the opponent against Horace Greeley. If you know American history, Grant won in a fucking landslide.
Yeah.
So, Annie Bunn at the same time was tired of being beat by her loser weird husband.
Naturally.
So she wanted a divorce.
Understandable.
Back then, you can't just do that. And being beaten wasn't a good enough reason, especially if you're just like a woman.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Oh, what? He beat you? Oh, it's so bad. Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck off. Being awful. Yeah.
Come here. I'm going to hit you. Come here.
Yeah. Bailiff, bring that woman forward. Yeah. So our boy Chuck comes up with the genius idea. He was going to bang a prostitute, and then he would get the lady to testify to his infidelity in court. It worked. He was successfully granted him a divorce and syphilis.
Oh, nice.
That's incurable.
Yeah.
So then he embraced religion again, publishing a book called The Truth that he almost entirely plagiarized, ironically. It was around this time that his brother wrote him a letter and was like, hey, dog, maybe you could, like, pay your bills.
No.
Stop running around. Just be like a functioning member of society. Charles replied, and I quote, find $7 enclosed, stick it up your bunghole, and wipe your nose on it, and that will remind you of the estimation in which you are held by Charles J. Cato.
That's incredible.
I was like, that's pretty good.
That's incredible.
Yeah, his brother was like, all right, then, yeah. Just you.
What a dickhead.
So then Guteau lived with his sister for a little bit, inexplicably attacked her with an axe, couldn't for the life of me find out what that was about.
Sometimes you just gotta pull an axe out on a bitch, you know what I'm saying?
On your sister,
yeah,
especially.
Yeah, on your sister, 100%.
This is around when Guteau's father began to believe Charles was possessed by the devil himself, which...
Sounds like it, yeah. Sounds like it.
This is when Guteau was becoming increasingly convinced that he was acting out of God's will and he would become the next Paul the Apostle, naturally.
Of course. You know, usually when you're insane, God's will, God usually chooses those people to act
out. God does pick the crazies a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting warriors he's picking.
Yeah,
he's like,
battle. This guy down here is really jazzed about God. We need a...
That guy can't afford shoes. I'm going to pick him to be the only man I speak to.
I saw this man smoke crack out of a light bulb. He's going to be the one to spread the message.
So he moves to Boston next for a few months, leaves in the middle of the night because he's running from debts again. This is his MO now. Like, he always leaves in the middle of the night.
I like it.
He gets on a boat ride. And dude, also good old days where you're like, I owe money, so I will leave. Done. You're clear.
Yeah,
That's so nice.
Like, go to the, done.
So nice. So, he takes a boat in the middle of the night. It crashes into another ship.
That's insane.
And the other ship goes under fast. It burns and goes under fast. Kills everyone on board.
What are they transporting? Gasoline? Like,
like, oh, they hit our firework and napalm ship.
They hit our gasoline and timber.
So everybody on the other ship dies. Everybody on his ship lives.
They were just like, we're never going to tell anyone about this happening.
He was like, well, obviously God wanted me to be alive for greater things. That's why I didn't die.
You know what? Understandable.
So he moved back to New York and resumed politics.
Damn.
It's 1880, and he swapped sides. He's a Republican now. And he picks Grant. He's supporting Grant, the man that he had was against previously. And he was writing another brilliant speech for him. And if you're really history nerd, you know that Grant lost the nomination after, and James Garfield took it out by surprise from the two competing factions in the Republican Party. So Charlie, never the quitter, just scratches out Grant's name and puts Garfield on the speech, literally.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So this one he delivers twice, passes out some copies, and James Garfield wins in November, due to the work of Charles Guteau.
I'm playing both sides, so I always come out.
Yeah. He's like, who's the candidate?
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. Guteau's... obviously believes that he got James Garfield installed into office. As a natural reward for his intellectual prowess, he demanded the consulship of Vienna, or like Paris, just whatever will work. He was rejected repeatedly. So it's March 1881. Our hero is destitute, sneaking between rooming houses and not paying for anything, walking the streets in a threadbare suit and no shoes, reading discarded newspapers in hotel lobbies to find out where the fuck Garfield is, because the man owes him a job.
Yeah.
At one point, he even managed to run into the Secretary of State and was like, hey man, when am I going to become the consular of fucking Paris? And the guy was like, do not speak to me again about the Paris consulship as long as you live. I'm Shut sick of hearing about it. Shut up about the sun. So James Garfield was a bit of a reformer. So he was in the middle of ending the practice of patronage, where jobs were given to campaign supporters. That before, if you paid for the campaign, they're like, I don't know, you want to be defense secretary? Fuck it. That's how the government worked.
I thought
now we just now it's the same thing, and we just lie about it.
I was trying to say, I was like, that's not happening anymore.
Because the patronage system is gone, it does make it even less likely that he would get the Paris job. So he pushes his intellectual mind to the brink and decides and realizes he has one step left to do. What is that? Can you guess?
Sorry, hold on. I accidentally muted myself. I don't know why that happened. He has one step left to do.
This is his last thing he could do to get this job.
Kidnap the president.
Shoot the president. Oh, but you were close.
Shit, I was close. God,
he's gotta kill
it.
The president. Yeah. So Garfield was a pretty big dude, and Guiteau got a good look at him, and he is like, oh, no way I'd stab that guy to death.
I'm gonna need a bigger sack. Yeah.
So he borrowed $15 from a relative, bought himself a Webley Bulldog revolver. He wanted the ivory grips, but it was an extra buck, and he's like, I can't afford them, but they'd look so much better in a museum when I kill the president.
It's true.
And then the stop owner was like, you know what, man? I'll throw in the ivory grips. You kill that president.
Yeah, like, yeah, crazy kid.
You crazy kid. You kids in your dreams.
Yeah.
So he practiced, to his credit, he did practice with it for weeks, which I was like,
okay.
That's something rare, dude.
Yeah, you're doing more than most of them.
There was one time that he was pretty close to James Garfield, but he was taking James Garfield was transporting his wife, who was sick at the time, and Guiteau thought it would be impolite to upset his wife at the time.
Listen,
which,
man,
shockingly considerate.
I respect it, but if you're gonna kill the president,
his wife's gonna just be upset anyway.
Yeah, regardless, you know. Yeah. It's better that she's there, so she'll get closure. She'll
true.
Know, yeah.
So he's reading the newspaper, gets word of it at the same train station, and July 2nd, 1881, walks behind Garfield, shoots him in the back twice. The second shot hits him in the vertebra, but not his spinal column. Or cord, rather.
Yeah.
And he says, Arthur, the vice president, is president now, as he was arrested. This was also at the time, the logic, this isn't so crazy, because at the time, vice presidents were the I can't remember. It was like the other candidate in the election or like who. Yeah, that's what it was. It was the other candidate in the election was your vice president, which I think is an incredible system.
Yeah, that's
like I'm like I would have loved Hillary Clinton to be Donald Trump's vice president.
And I love that it's like just rubbing their nose in the loss more. They're like, oh, you fucking lost. Oh, now you got to work for this guy.
So, So he was like, yeah, I've got Arthur into president. So Garfield died 11 weeks later, largely because the old-timey doctors just kept poking him around in there and just got him infected.
They're like, I'm sure there's a bullet in here somewhere. We're going to find it.
With sterile instruments, it is believed that Garfield would have easily lived from the wounds or if he just hadn't been treated at all.
Yeah,
in fact,
that's
very similar story to Lincoln. Actually,
they're just like spitting on their tools. They're like sanitizing,
wiping it on their dirty, bloody fucking bag. They're like, let me get that bullet out of there. A modern professor of surgery, I think it was from Michigan, said that with modern medicine, Garfield would have been home in a few days. Like,
damn,
not that big of a deal, but they're just like, let me get it in there. Horrible, miserable death. So it was originally Guiteau had been charged with attempted murder. Then he dies. He gets real murder. And of course, he tried to represent himself, which he was denied.
You know,
maintaining this podcast long record.
Yeah, long standing
record. Every dumb who wants to fucking represent himself.
Yeah.
His first appointed lawyer resigned within a week of a trial. Obviously,
wonder why.
Yeah. The next lawyer was a land title examiner. It wasn't in criminal law at all, but he had married Guiteau's sister. He was like, fuck, man, no one else is going to help this goddamn lunatic, so I'll do it. Guiteau spent the entire trial insulting everybody constantly, including his defense team. He formatted his own testimony for the trial as an epic poem that he recited in its entirety. And then he published his autobiography in the New York Herald while he was on trial.
Nice.
With, that ended with a wanted ad for a nice Christian lady under 30 years of age.
He's like, I got to pay for the ad space, so I'm just going to get it all in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I'm selling this coat. Yeah, I won't be needed.
No lowballs. I know what I've got.
He's like, I have an excellent revolver that I think will be a wonderful museum piece if anyone's interested. He wrote a letter to the now president saying that he should be freed since he just got you a raise.
I
and a
got
promotion.
You your fucking job, guy.
It's like,
pardon me.
That's bold. And he delighted in the media and public attention, not understanding that he was broadly hated. Everybody was pissed. James Garfield was a pretty popular choice. No one in the history of ever liked Charles Guiteau.
Yeah, most of the time people that do this don't realize that they are not well received.
No. He was sentenced, he was found guilty, sentenced to execution. He danced to the gallows. He recited an odd poem about himself, written from the perspective of a child and delivered in a high falsetto that he requested was accompanied by an orchestra.
Dude, this dude,
it was denied.
This dude hit the gritty on the way to the gallows. Just like,
he's like, 4 score and 7 years ago. Everyone's like, what's going on? He's like, where's the orchestra? They're like, yeah, you didn't do the orchestra, dude. Just please.
Dude, that's incredible.
And then he was hung and his neck was snapped and he died. Bits of the rope were sold as souvenirs. And he had been buried and they were worried that someone would dig up his body and chop it into bits for souvenirs. Okay. God, we were weird in the 19th century.
Yeah, we were.
So they disinterred his body, sent it to the Museum of Health in Maryland, where they kept his brain and spleen and skeleton, and I actually saw parts of his brain on display in the Mütter in Philadelphia.
Really?
The Mütter Museum, yeah.
That's crazy.
That fucking loony doony goofball. And
absolute goober.
That's the story of Charles J. Guiteau.
Dude,
and I think, personally, that he probably earned and deserved the insanity plea.
Yeah.
Because that guy was bonkers.
I think so, too. I think
I'm
so
like,
too.
Come on, guys. He's doing the gritty to the fucking gallows
he's fucking
right now.
Delivering his poem in a falsetto, bro. Like, come on.
He's doing a poem as his final words.
As his final words? Yeah, that's fucking... I think he definitely does deserve the
insanity. It's such a funny story, but he really is like... sucks. Like, I mean, he sucked.
Yeah, he didn't
seem
like a real swell guy to hang around and fucking just be associated with.
He's shit for a lot of reasons. In a weird way, I don't think he's shit for shooting the president. Like, he murdered someone, which is horrible, but like, I don't know. He did not. I don't feel like he didn't understand what was going on at all.
Yeah, I think he was just pants crapping crazy.
You know, I was crunching the numbers on it. We've shot presidents like 8 times.
Really?
Like, yeah. Think about that.
That's crazy.
Like, out of 45 presidents, 8? That's like almost every 6 presidents get shot.
Damn.
And I'm like, it's been 6 presidents since we shot a president. I'm just saying.
Like the Jeepers Creepers monster. It's like every 23 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Wakes up to feed.
The funniest part about president shooting is that Gerald Ford got shot twice in 1 month.
Damn. Like,
I would be fucking screaming.
I would be a little upset, dude. As a secret service, I'm like, second time, huh? Second time?
Oh, yeah. Two assassination attempts.
You guys ever thought of like stepping slightly to the right next time and get in the way of the bullet? Who knows?
I'm beginning to have some doubts about your loyalty to me, sir. But yeah, that's the spice. So what do you got for us for the sugar this episode?
I'm going to be talking about a B-17 bomber titled Ye Olde Pub.
The Memphis Belle? Oh.
No.
Which one?
Ye Olde Pub. Once I start telling the story, you'll know what I'm talking about.
I know every B-17 story.
So when I cover the story, I was like, I already know that you're going to know what this story is.
I do.
So... it's December.
I'm not like super good on all the details, so it'll still be new.
So it's December 20th, 1943. A B-17 bomber named Ye Olde Pub and its crew of 10 men from the 379th Bombardment Group are taking off from the very first bombing run ever. Very first one. This wasn't one of those first time missions where the crew is just going to get their feet a little wet and then scamper back to base. This was the real fucking deal. They were going to be flying right into the shit. The target in question was Focke-Wulf, 190 aircraft production facility in Bremen. And before taking flight, they attend a mission briefing. It's here they're informed that they're informed of the staggering amount of firepower that is guarding their target, something to the tune of 250 flak guns, which, for those of you who don't know, is basically anti-aircraft weapons.
They shoot shells full of nails that explode in the sky.
Yeah.
They're pretty bad.
Yeah, they're gnarly. So
they're pretty bad.
The old pub's crew mans their positions and they take flight. And aboard the old pub are the following crew members. So the second Lieutenant Charles L. Charlie Brown, he is the pilot, aircraft commander. Second Lieutenant Spencer Pinky Luke, who is the co-pilot. Second Lieutenant Albert Doc Saduk, who is the navigator. Second Lieutenant Robert Andy Andrews, who is the radio operator and bombardier. I don't know. Which
Bombardier.
Bombardier. Yeah, I got it right the first time. Nice. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Sergeant Bertrand Frenchy Kalumbe, who is the top turret gunner and flight engineer. And then Sergeant Richard Dick Peachout, who is a radio operator. Sergeant Hughes Ecky Eckenrode, who is the tail gunner. Sergeant Lloyd Jennings, who is the left waist gunner. Sergeant
God, we had so many fucking people on these planes. I'm like, is this plane for bombing or for just carrying all these dudes around?
There's a reason they call it the Fortress in the Sky. They fucking, So, and then with Sergeant Alex Russian Yelisanko, who was the right waist gunner. And then lastly is Sergeant Samuel Blackie Blackford, the ball turret gunner. I heard that name and I was like, ooh, dicey. He's a white guy. He is a white guy. Yeah.
Which one would you pick if you were gonna? They're like you get you could pick a litter. You get to shoot pick a gun on the B-17. Which one you want to do?
I would either. I don't know. The ball turret gunner seems pretty sick. Be a little cramped.
It seems fun, but yeah.
I was gonna say tail gunner too, but I was like, you're not gonna. That's not a long lifespan.
Honestly, your best bet is in the waist or the tail, because what they were always shooting at the crew was the big thing, like the pilots. So they were trying to get towards the front the most. And they would also do a lot of from the underneath. So the ball gunner shot a ton.
Damn,
Yes.
I did not know that.
And it was very common when it started to spiral to split the tail off and the people in the tail could get out. They could parachute out.
I think tail gunner.
If you're in the fucking cockpit, you're dead.
You're fucked. There's no surviving that.
No, I would definitely be like, although, man, the view from the bottom gunner
be fucking incredible, dude. Yeah. So ye old pub, its crew, and their 12 500-pound bombs take their position in the 8-mile-long stream of aircraft headed to northern Germany. So far,
isn't that also insane? We're only carrying 6,000 pounds of bombs. We have fighters on aircraft carriers carry like five times that amount now. Like, it's nothing.
So they're on the way to northern Germany. So far, it's smooth sailing. The men make their way into Germany shortly after 11 a.m. Excuse me. The threat of flat guns on the ground were not the only threat the crew had to be worried about. The flying fortress was also susceptible to attacks from enemy Nazi fighter pilots. To help mitigate the possibility of one of these enemy Mi-262s successfully taking down Yield Pub before reaching its designated target, they are accompanied by P-47 Thunderbolts. So after about 30 minutes after entering Nazi airspace, they are spotted by the enemy's anti-aircraft, and the crew of EO Pub starts seeing pops of black smoke in the air as Nazi 88mm flat guns start firing at them from the ground.
Wait, you said they had 262s on their ass?
Yeah, that's what it said.
That seems weird. I guess it's early. I mean, they didn't deploy the 262 till pretty late into the war, but because those are jets.
Yeah,
those are jets.
Those are the first
jets in war. Yeah, but anyway,
maybe they said something about it, and I got it mixed up with I forgot the name of the other
FW190
that they fucking flew
or
around.
The BF-109, you know, or Ju-87 Stuka. It could have been any one of those.
That's. I think I might have just picked one and been like, "This will go."
I'm almost sure it was the FW-190.
Probably.
Yeah.
So They're accompanied by
sneak airplane names past.
Yeah, I know. I just like pick one out of the hat. So they're accompanied by P-47 Thunderbolts. So about 30 minutes after entering Nazi airspace, they start getting hit with flak guns. So they start getting hit with these 88 millimeter flak guns, and those 20 pound shells are bursting all around, and pilot Charlie Brown is doing his best to avoid any contact. To make matters worse, his vision is obstructed by the thick plumes of black smoke that the shells leave behind after exploding. In almost an instant, a horrendous sound echoes through the aircraft as the plexiglass nose of the plane is sliced off and smashes into Charlie's windshield.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, it sucks. You will have that on the big jobs, though. With the front of the plane blasted to bits, the plane is traveling at over 100 miles an hour. Frigid negative 76 degrees temperatures whip through the inside of the aircraft. So Charlie Brown is shaken up, but he's able to keep control of the aircraft, and he continues onward when Yield Pub takes another hit, completely disabling engine number 2, only to be followed by another shell ripping through the left wing. To make matters worse, engine number 4 is damaged but still spinning, causing Charlie to have to basically wrestle with a stick to keep the aircraft flying in a straight path because they are rapidly approaching their target. As they're being peppered with flak guns, Charlie releases the payload that Yield Pub is carrying, and now it's time to head home, but they are in pretty bad fucking shape, and they're not out of harm's way. So, the bomber itself has, at best, 40% total rated power available due to all the damage it's taking. The internal oxygen, hydraulic, and electrical systems are heavily damaged. It had lost half of its rudder and port side elevator, which is its left side, and its nose cone. Several of Yield
Pub, if you guys don't know a lot about planes, you need almost all of those.
Oh yeah, so, yeah,
yeah. Pretty much every one of them.
So Yield Pub's gunner's weapons had jammed, most likely due to the loss of onboard systems, leading to frozen firing mechanisms. Losing these important weapon systems leaves the bomber with only 2 dorsal turret guns plus 1 of the 3 forward firing nose guns out of the 11 available weapons to defend themselves. So that sucks.
We only have 6 out of our 11 50 caliber machine guns.
So
American airplanes are incredible. You know what's crazy? In that book I read, the I Was a Kamikaze, especially the B-29s. Like the armor on the planes that we were flying around was so thick that a lot of the Japanese planes couldn't even do anything to them.
Damn.
Which I was like, I didn't even know we could do that to planes to be that armored.
Yeah.
And then they were faster than most of the Japanese fighters.
Damn.
Like just our bombers.
Damn.
And they carried way more bombs. But the guns that we put on these things were so powerful that they had better range than the fighters
God
did.
Damn, dude.
They're like, this is fucking unbelievable.
How am I supposed to run myself into this thing if I can't even catch up to it?
Like, I mean, literally, though, that was actually a problem. It was like, it's just like so insane, like what we put in the sky.
Dude, yeah.
It was like an M1 Abrams from the Gulf War, like in World War One, you know?
Flying through the air.
Yeah.
So, on top of all this, many of the crew were badly wounded. The tail gunner, Eckenrod, had been completely decapitated by a direct hit from a cannon shell.
And that killed him?
Yeah, he is what someone referred to as deceased. So, while Yelisanko was suffering from a critical leg wound caused by shrapnel as well, Blackford's feet were frozen due to the shorted out heating wires in his uniform, and Peachout had been hit in the eye by a cannon shell, and Charlie had taken a hit to his left shoulder. So they're all pretty fucked up. So the men are scrambling about the bomber. They're in bad condition, trying to administer first aid and some sort of pain relief, but all the morphine syrettes carried on board had frozen due to the temperatures that were in the plane due to the nose being ripped off and the giant gaping holes in the side of it. And the radio had been destroyed in the fighting, so they couldn't relay their situation to anyone else. They had a very brief discussion on what to do next. They could continue on their current mission, which was to make it out of enemy territory and get home, or they could bail out of the aircraft. Their decision didn't take long as they realized Yelisanko would be unable to make a safe landing with his injury, and they were unwilling to leave a brother behind on the plane, so they pressed on. Unfortunately for the men aboard Yield Pub, they weren't out of the fire just yet. They were still in enemy airspace. Still in enemy airspace, and there was a shark in the sky. The shark's name was Franz Stigler. At the time, Franz was a well-seasoned German pilot. He was an ace with 27 victories under his belt. Despite that's a lot of fucking victories.
We don't even have aces anymore.
No, that is 27 is insane. So despite having an American 50 BMG round lodged in his radiator, he takes back to the skies after refueling and rearming. He's looking to turn that 27 victories into 28. So he quickly catches up to ye olde pub. Before putting the struggling bomber out of its misery, he does a little bit of observation. Franz can see through the massive holes in the bomber's airframe, and through these holes, he can see the injured and incapacitated crew. The crew of ye olde pub sees Franz and think, you know, this is fucking it. We're done. Like, yeah, he's got us dead to rights, and we're in no shape to fight back. They just don't have the weapons to take down as much faster, more agile, and non-damage fighter. And I'm sure at this point they start making peace with their gods. To their surprise, the German fighter doesn't open fire on the damaged bomber. Franz, after observing the struggling crew, recalled a few words from one of his commanding officers during his time fighting in North Africa, and they went something to the tune of, quote, "If I ever see or hear of you shooting a man in a parachute, I will shoot you myself." And
right on.
Franz would later say, quote, "To me, it was like they were in a parachute. I saw them and I couldn't shoot them down." As the two planes flew parallel, Franz began trying to signal to Charlie to either land his plane in a nearby German airfield and basically be captured, or divert his course to neutral Sweden, where they would receive medical attention and be interned for the remainder of the war. Charlie, nervous and struggling to keep the plane in the sky, couldn't understand what Franz was trying to tell him, so he continued on his flight path. He really just couldn't.
He's like, "I don't speak German."
Yeah. He just couldn't do anything. Yeah, fuck it, we ball. So Franz, seeing that his message was not getting read, he moved in close to ye olde pub, and in an act that could very well potentially get him executed once he landed on the ground, he began flying side by side with the damaged bomber so German anti-aircraft weapons would not shoot it out of the sky. Flying in close formation to Charlie's port side wing, Franz escorted the limping bomber through enemy airspace. Brown had ordered his dorsal turret gunner to train his guns on Franz, but not to open fire, but kind of just as a warning. Franz observed this happening. He checked that the bomber was well out of enemy airspace. He gave a salute to Charlie, and he peeled off back to enemy lines. Charlie managed to fly the 250 miles across the North Sea and land his plane at at RAF Seething, home of the 44th Bomb Group. And his debriefing, he tells the officers about the German that had guarded him through enemy airspace. He was instructed not to repeat this to the rest of the unit as
don't tell any of the Germans are people.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, essentially, yeah, they said, you know, don't repeat this to anybody because they didn't want to build any positive sentiment about enemy pilots in case other damaged bombers decide to hold their fire when they're met with a not so sympathetic German pilot. Franz, on the other hand, did not say shit when he landed. He was like, "I'm not getting shot in the face for this." Both of the men served full combat tours and returned to their respective homes after the war. In 1986, Lieutenant Colonel Brown was asked to speak at a combat pilot reunion event called the Gathering of the Eagles, and it was there he was asked if he had any memorable missions during the war, and that's when he told the story of his enemy escort. After this, Brown decided he wanted to track down the pilot that had saved his life, and for 4 years, he searched through records, anything that might point him in the direction of finding the pilot that helped him and his crew. After coming up empty-handed, he had written a letter to the Combat Pilot Association newsletter, and a few months later, he receives a letter from Franz stating, quote, "I was the one." The two men spoke on the phone, and Franz goes into great detail about his version of the day, and Brown is 100% sure that he's talking to the right men.
That would be so fucking insane,
dude.
Right? Like, you know, Germany got, like, real fucked up from the war. Yeah. I think that dude was dead within a year.
Dude,
you know
what I mean? Absolutely.
You know how insane it is? A German pilot lasted, like, a year and a half.
The entire war? Yeah.
Of the war? Like, The latter half of that war? Holy shit.
The pilots' life expectancies were not very long.
No.
So the two ended up becoming very, very close friends, and they remained close friends until their death in 2008, dying only a few months from each other.
Escorting them to the very end.
Yeah, right. Yeah, to the afterlife, baby.
What a bro. Yeah,
right? I mean, it's not our usual
I mean, he counts. That's your story. Sugar. That counts. Yeah, no, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very cool fucking story. I remember seeing a little...
And, you know, I mean, the man, at least he wasn't a war criminal.
Like, yeah, yeah, for real. You know, and...
Not every pilot back then was... the pilots especially were not.
Yeah, like, no, they were...
Usually Nazis.
They had they had a pretty hard code. I mean, the whole not shooting people in parachutes thing was like a well... respected thing amongst both sides, and like I remember,
except for the Japanese.
Yeah, except for the Japanese. Yeah, that's true. They didn't give a fuck.
They shot.
But I remember seeing an interview with a World War II pilot where he was talking about being in the sky and he witnessed an enemy pilot shooting men in their parachutes, and he was like, "Yeah, I'm seeing this pilot just shoot people in their parachutes," and he was like, "I had about 200 rounds left. So I got behind him and I shot him the fuck down." He was like, he ejected and popped his parachute and I fucking tore him to pieces because how awesome. Dare you shoot boys in my boys in their parachutes. Yeah. I was like, fucking badass, dude.
That is crazy. That's a good story. I think, probably evens out. Kinda.
Yeah, I agree. I
mean, Charles shot a president, but just one guy.
Yeah. Just a single guy.
And, that guy, saved a few people.
Yeah,
even.
So, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, the only person that died,
Americans, which are more important. Yeah. People than others. That counts for double the lives.
The only person that died on that mission was the guy who got decapitated by a flat gun shell.
If it were me, I wouldn't have been decapitated.
Yeah, I'm like kind of built different. I could. I think I could take at least two of those 88 millimeter shells straight.
Easy.
No armor, no nothing.
Nothing. Yeah.
Maybe next time you get in a war, just like move your head out of the way or something.
You idiot. You absolute fool.
You absolute buffoon. You got any recommendations?
You know, if you haven't seen The Mummy, it's a good movie.
It's true.
It's a pretty good movie.
It is a good movie.
It's a lot of fun. It feels like, I don't know, they really just don't make them like that anymore. And
yeah.
It's a good time. And everybody in that movie is super hot. So
that's a big plus. That is a big plus.
Yeah, that's fun.
I don't really have I don't really have a recommendation because I watched, I guess like The Accountant, but you know, we did already, I guess we didn't like fully talk about it, but yeah, The Accountant's a good movie. It's like a good action film.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's Ben Affleck does a good job. So, yeah, fucking The Mummy and The Accountant. We'll see you guys next week. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe.
If you guys have scary movies to recommend,
we'll definitely do a season on, excuse me, on scary movies. I would be super down for that. If you want to send us some mail or whatever, you can email us at snackspacksmail@gmail.com or you can message the podcast Instagram at snackspackspodcast. And we will read your messages on air. So go ahead and fucking hop on it. Get to it. We like reading the shit that you guys send us. But we'll see you guys. We'll see you next week. We won't see you next week because Goose is going to be on vacation. But we'll see you the week after that. Be safe. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Love you so much. Bye-bye.